Hello, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's weekly look at the world of comics, manga, and other sequential illustrated media, and that. With me this week are, as usual, Rob.
Hello.
And Andrew.
That's my cue to say hello, but I'm not going to do it. Take that, the system.
Yes.
That's it. I've done it. I've toppled the pod here.
That's it. He's brought the system. So hopefully we'll be back next week.
Yes, with a new system.
Yeah, which will look remarkably like the old system, only with a slightly more bruised Andrew as we try and bring him into line. So how are you guys?
I mean, apart from the rampant workplace harassment, fine.
I'm okay.
I like the way that you define reading comics as work.
I'd know some of these comics we get.
Well, yeah, there is that.
He's not wrong.
Some of them are more effort than they're worth.
I still have the Flowers of Evil. I'm looking at it right now. just tell me if you're good, Flowers of Evil. I don't know.
Hey, I'm doing Helvetica Standard today, and I'm in total agreement with Mick's first assessment of it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
But what we do get is the news.
Yes.
Yay!
Bob starts off with some news.
You want me to start with the news? That's not a problem.
You start with the news.
Who's starting? Me or Andrew? I'm confused.
You.
Okay.
I thought we'd established that, Andrew.
I wasn't sure.
I didn't yell at Rob. This is good. This is good. The listeners finally get to hear the rampant behind-the-scenes professionalism that goes on.
Yes. This is like a director's cut episode.
You know how DC have, over the last few years, they've had this... I don't know how you'd describe it. Addiction.
Okay, great. We'll move on then.
No. It's kind of an addiction to just doing bizarre things with the DC universe, with their heroes, especially with the likes of Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. And they've got this upcoming JLA Young Animal event called Milk Wars. And in that event, the heroes from DC's main continuity and its Young Animal imprint will team up against Retco, which is an interdimensional corporation that has the ability to rewrite realities in order to package them as stories for new audiences. And Milk Wars is going to run for a month. It begins when the Justice League and the Doom Patrol are forced to go up against Milkman Man, an even more sanitized version of Superman, who's been shaped to serve Retco's larger evil plan. The series is actually going to contain Milkman Man, but we'll also have Father Bruce, who is a Batman who commits his life to taking in orphaned children, and Wonder Wife, which is a horrifying Stepfordized version of Diana.
Right. Rob?
Yeah?
You know how you always say you keep finding these things?
Yep.
I'm starting to get a bit suspicious that this is a bit like that fireman who always shows up at the scene first of the horrific blaze, and he's the one who's, you know, he's there, he's diving in, he's rescuing someone. But really, he's the one who started the fire. Are you working for DC, Rob? Is this you? Is this what you're doing?
No, I am not the bad guy from that Backdraft movie.
It has to be said that the synopsis you gave there does sound like the kind of tangents you go off on when we say something on the show.
Yeah, so imagine how I felt reading it and thinking, have you guys been in my head? What's going on?
I imagine that the way you felt, because it's such a familiar tangent, was, oh yes, I am signing up for this.
Nope. They lost me as soon as I read Milkman Man. I was out.
I think it's amazing that they've decided to do this series. Having scored such a massive hit with the forthright, self-assured, assertive female role model Wonder Woman in the movie, that they've now taken a massive step back with her and made her into Wonder Wife.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's probably the point.
I know, but it's just, we all know who this is going to upset most, don't we?
Yeah.
The SJWs. And they're not going to see the point.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean, I'm just a bit shocked at hearing Mick say young people terms like SJW.
I'm down with the kids.
No, you're not, Mick. I thought this podcast was supposed to be a safe space from that kind of thing.
I've seen a Digipoke.
See, Digipoke is my favourite Yu-Gi-Oh card.
Oh, I mean, I can understand the Father Bruce part, okay? Although it does make Batman, I don't know, somehow it makes him even creepier that he goes out and tries to rescue orphaned kids all of the time. And the picture they've got of him is of a priest dressed as a bat.
I just tire of all this. Let's find a new way to reimagine these characters.
Yeah.
Because it's only very rarely that they're an interesting reimagining.
Well, this is true. I mean, Wonder Woman, for example, they're doing Wonder Woman as Wonder Wife, but it's only recently that, it's only in the last couple of years that they brought out Bombshells, which had Wonder Woman basically being an Amazon, but dressed as some kind of housewife.
Yeah.
But the problem was she was dressed like the Yes We Can woman.
Oh, is that what she was dressed like?
I mean, I think so.
I don't know the Yes We Can woman. So.
Okay, you both all look confused. Next news story.
Over to you then.
Yeah. So, I was going to say sticking with Marvel, but that was about DC, which is the opposite company.
For now.
Oh.
That's barely possible.
No.
But anyway, that Captain Marvel movie, what's going to happen?
Yes.
Apparently, Jude Law is in talks to join. He's confusingly listed as the male lead, but not the lead character, I guess. But the important thing is he will be playing Dr. Walter Lawson, a.k.a. Mar-Vell. It's like the original Captain Marvel.
Ah.
Mm.
And apparently he'll serve as kind of a mentor to Carol Danvers. I thought that was pretty cool that, you know, we're actually going to get to see the original Captain Marvel in some form or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I assumed what they would do is just kind of go straight to Carol Danvers as the first Captain Marvel.
Well, that's basically the idea that they were giving everyone as well. You know, I mean, they didn't really release any details about it, and so the natural assumption was it's just going to be Captain Marvel or Carol Danvers as Captain Marvel or as Ms. Marvel becoming Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that I can Jude Law. He'll make a good Captain Marvel or guy who is not Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Or guy who was formerly Captain Marvel.
Guy who was at least in some way tangentially related to Captain Marvel.
Just going back for a second, you know you got confused between DC and Marvel, and you said maybe they'll end up as one company. Did you see the Chinese poster for Justice League?
No.
Oh, that like really badly fan-edited one of the Justice League killing all the Marvel heroes.
Yes.
Which, given Justice League's box office takings, was highly presumptuous.
I know. I was just like, hang on, what's that in Batman's hand? Whose head is that? I know he's violent, but he's never been that violent that he cuts off the heads of Marvel heroes.
Who knows what will happen in the next DC crossover event?
We don't know. Anyway, is it back to me, Andrew?
Yep, yes it is.
Okay, Marvel, for some reason that I can't actually figure out, they've been teasing the return of Wolverine, but the way they've been teasing it is they've done like art that says, where is Wolverine? Find him in post-credits scenes at the end of key Marvel titles starting this January. You know?
What?
And this is...
those credits that comics don't have.
Yes.
Well, comics kind of do have credits, but... Isn't that the first page?
Yes.
Isn't the post-credit sequence of a comic the comic?
Yes. The thing is, they're doing Where is Wolverine? And my first thought was, hang on, are they doing the Where's Wally thing, but with Wolverine, so you just can have a page filled with all sorts of stuff?
Yeah, you've just got pictures of Logan in a stripy jumper and a silly hat with glasses.
Yes.
And also, once you think you found him, it's actually a trick. They're actually all Wolverine the entire time.
Yes.
Like, one of them was the girl Wolverine. One of them was the old Wolverine. One of them was the Wolverine who's the son of Wolverine, but from an alternate reality.
Basically, yeah. So, yeah, post-credit scenes in comics. I'm still confused by that.
That means that Marvel will have to invent the concept of a comic book credit scene.
How's that going to work?
Do they just mean these are backup stories? Have they invented a thing that have been around since, like, the invention of comics?
I think so.
It's a reimagining of a thing that's been around.
Boy, that is the kind of ingenuity I expect from Marvel.
Marvel, the Apple of the comics world.
They're not called the House of Ideas for nothing. The House of Ideas, we never said they were good ones.
Oh. I know where I need to work now. I know where my future career lies. Marvel, I'm coming home.
I like the naivety of you thinking you've got a future career.
I'm just saying, Marvel's where I belong. House of Ideas, we never said they were good ones.
Only if the House of Ideas has a padded interior.
Are you honestly saying that Marvel doesn't have anything like that?
I wouldn't comment. They might stop sending us comics.
I mean, they only sometimes send us comics now. Like, when they can be bothered to remember that we've actually sent an order in.
Yeah, but that's sometimes. We don't want that to become no times.
Oh.
I mean, I think we've just kind of hit the bedrock of media journalism, which is we can't say mean things because then we won't get the free stuff.
Yeah, and then we'll just say bad things about it without actually being able to justify them.
Mm. No, we'll be fine. Don't worry. We can say things like, I'm pretty sure Marvel does have a padded cell. Where else do they keep Jeff Loeb?
I mean, I don't think they keep him anywhere, Rob. I don't think that's how companies work. I think you're getting companies and prisons confused again.
He is, I think, yeah.
No, this is America we're talking about. They're the same thing.
Well, on that cutting political commentary, hey, let's talk about Justice League.
Okay.
Yay.
By which I mean that good Justice League cartoon series that was, like, got a long time ago now.
See, I can't talk about that. I haven't seen it.
I have. It was very, very good.
Yeah, it was like early to mid-2000s.
Yeah, because it started off as just Justice League and then went to Justice League Unlimited, didn't it?
Well, I mean, technically it started off as Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series, then Justice League, then Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah, and...
which is how you make a cinematic universe.
Oh, it was so good as well. And some of this...
I mean, DC... Just let Bruce Timm make more Justice League stuff.
Didn't we say this ages ago as well?
Probably. I feel like this is the kind of thing I say a lot.
I'm pretty sure you and I both said just let Bruce Timm have the reins for all of it. Just let him run it all. Because he gets it. I mean, in Justice League Unlimited, you had the Thanagarian invasion of Earth, which was great, because that was the whole thing with Hawkgirl being a member of the Justice League, but then betraying them and then betraying the Thanagarians. And
also, I feel like I should probably mention what the actual story is.
Yes, before.
Which is like kind of some of the old cast and like the old page for the cartoon have started tweeting about doing a reunion movie and want fans to kind of start tweeting at Warner Brothers to make it happen. So this is mainly coming from Susan Eisenberg, who voiced Wonder Woman, and it's also been retweeted by Kevin Conroy, who voiced Batman in, like, all the Batman things.
All the good Batman things.
And also Arkham Origins. Except, no, he didn't. So never mind. The point stands.
So they want people to tweet to Warner Brothers, okay?
Yes, so Warner Brothers, do that, please. Please do it.
Yes.
Make it a thing. It'll make me happy.
And all the listeners, tweet to Warner Brothers. Make this happen.
Like, I'm not saying surround the Warner Brothers office, you know, barricade them inside until that they make the calls. But I'm not saying do that.
Can one of you guys tweet it for me? Because setting up a Twitter account just to do that sounds like so much effort.
I mean, that's just not helpful, Mick.
I'm not going to set up a Twitter account to send a message to DC just so I can then delete the Twitter account because I'm never going to use it for anything else.
Look, I'm just saying, if we all had that attitude, no one in Russia would have bothered to make Donald Trump president.
Clearly, then, my attitude is the sensible one to use.
Yeah.
Yes, but also Warner Brothers, make an animated Justice League movie, please.
Yes.
Do they often listen to what the fans want?
I mean, I don't know. Like, this had happened like a year ago, I would say it was fairly unlikely. But we did get Batman and Harley Quinn, which was basically like a continuation of Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
So I could actually see it happening.
Melissa Rauch wasn't actually bad as Harley Quinn in that, I thought.
Actually, she did a good job. She was a good Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's possible. And also to all you superhero fans, if you've not seen Justice League or Justice League Unlimited or even Batman the Animated Series or Superman the Animated Series, go back and watch them.
Okay, will do.
And hey, isn't it a funny coincidence that we're talking about the Justice League? when there's that new Justice League movie out.
Oh, yeah, that's a thing. See,
surprise, this was all actually leading to a new segment where we actually bothered to talk about superhero movies and TV shows and stuff. That's the name of the segment.
I think it needs work.
And by new segment, I mean, like, actually making the thing we do all the time into a proper segment. Someone give opinions on the Justice League movie now, please.
So,
I kind of liked it.
You know what? I kind of liked it as well.
I have to agree. It was all right. It wasn't what I expected, though. And I think that's the best thing about it, is that it wasn't what I expected.
I mean, I personally feel like it was exactly what we were expecting until Joss Whedon came along and fixed it. Because I think a lot of the bits I didn't like were the very Zack Snyder-y bits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like how the film opens up as kind of Superman's died. Oh, by the way, Superman dies at the end of Batman v Superman. Also, he comes back to life in Justice League.
Could you not have done a spoiler alert first?
Spoiler alert, I spoiled things like a few minutes ago.
It's also
Wipe your minds and don't listen to that bit again.
Well,
anyway, in the whole opening, it's really overwrought and ridiculous.
Yes.
Like there's a bit where there's like a homeless man on the street with just a sign that says, "I tried." Yeah. And it's just the most Zack Snyder thing. Most just like overblown, unsubtle, brick to the face, desperate attempt to like convey some emotion.
They're grieving, goddammit.
Also, why? I thought everyone hated Superman, and now suddenly like the world can't function without him.
See, this is the thing. I thought that my main problem with Justice League is that for Justice League to actually make sense, even with Joss Whedon coming in and fixing things, you have to go back and change certain things about Batman v Superman and make it so that Batman, you know, just basically get rid of the whole Doomsday thing, have Batman as the person who kills Superman, and just have the rest of the world loving him.
Because
that whole first segment,
I think the whole thing was because Batman like had the kryptonite spear, and that's what weakened Superman. And so that's why now he feels quite guilty about Superman dying.
Yeah, but
Superman, again, that guy he knew for like 20 minutes.
And happened to have...
And is now like his best friend.
Yeah, their mums happened to have the same name, which is why he stopped. Oh, God, what kind of a stupid reason is that, Zach?
Incidentally, one of like the best things I've seen online is that one scene where like Aquaman shoves Bruce Wayne up against the wall. And like, is he... So the little text thing was just Bruce Wayne saying, "Please find Nemo." And it's Aquaman goes, "Why did you say that name?"
Oh, that's brilliant.
I think the only thing that stuck out like a sore thumb to me was how much of an afterthought did Cyborg look like?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird because... Like, not to spoil it, but in, like, the final battle, Cyborg seems to have, like, the most important job of any member of the Justice League. But yeah. Also, he feels like the guy who's just kind of there.
Yep.
It's almost like all the trailers and the advertising material went out, and about 3 weeks before the film got released, someone said, "We've put loads of mentions of Cyborg in the trailer, and he's not actually in the film. Quick, write something." We'll shoot it against green screen. We'll mix it in with all the rest of the stuff. And
the thing with Cyborg is we could have perhaps actually done with an origin movie for him.
Well, I think this is the other thing that suffered. And Cyborg is probably the most obvious sufferer from it. But I think, you know, Aquaman is probably the best represented of the not previously appearing in a solo movie.
Yeah.
Members of the Justice League.
But, I mean, they are supposed to be doing a Cyborg movie, aren't they?
Yeah, but yeah, I feel like we could have done with an origin movie to introduce him first.
Yeah, instead of having, like, a 3-second clip on a computer in Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially because, like, his whole thing is that he's really sad that he's been turned into a weird cyborg man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we got that from animated bits.
Yeah, and like, because we never see that, I think it kind of, it doesn't really work emotionally.
No.
See, I remember in, you know, the old Teen Titans comics, because Cyborg was part of the Teen Titans for, like, years and years and years. In one of the Teen Titan comics, they actually found a way to give him back his humanity, to take away the cybernetics and actually have him as human again. And that whole, that it was actually one of the most, one of the more emotional comics that came out from that Teen Titans run. I wish I could remember who was doing the writing then. And it was him as, you know, as a human. But then something happens, and as he's been told that he shouldn't basically exert himself or anything like that until these this transplant of things has actually taken root properly. But an incident happens, and because he's been cyborg for so long, he immediately starts getting involved in it. But that then causes malfunctions with all of the body parts that have been given to him. And so now he's basically dying because he doesn't have the cybernetics to live.
I've completely forgotten what like that was tying into that we said before.
Cyborg. It was all cyborg.
But that, the lack of origin. But the point is, you know, relying on something like that from a comic is not the point in a standalone movie like this.
Yeah.
You know, the audience needs to have some kind of grounding in where Cyborg came from. We don't. They introduced the Flash in a sort of clumsily similar way to the way that Spider-Man was introduced in Civil War.
Yep.
See, weirdly, I feel like the Flash's introduction kind of assumes that you've watched the Flash TV series.
Yeah, which is weird because that's a different continuity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, this in Civil War, it was like, hey, look, here's Spider-Man. Everyone knows who Spider-Man is, so we don't really need to explain that. And it's like, here's the Flash. You know him from that TV series that has nothing to do with this movie, but you watched, right? Right, yeah. Guys? Please say you did. But also forget about it, because we're going to, like, do the exact same scenes as that, but with different actors.
Yeah.
And then what we're going to do is we're going to introduce you to this guy who lives underwater, who is generally known by all popular media as the sucky one from the DC Universe, and we're going to make him kick ass.
Yeah, but we are going to make him Macho Man Randy Savage with a trident.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that...
There's a bit where Aquaman fights a bunch of parademons in the air.
Yeah, I know.
He can't fly. It's the best thing. Just the body surfs one of them down.
Yep.
One of the things...
Also, speaking of that, so just one thing I want to say. I thought the parademons looked sucky.
Yeah.
Like, it's that... Again, it's that Zack Snyder, like, something which is super detailed but doesn't have any design.
Yeah.
You know, what's his face? Oh, I forgot his name. Bad guy.
Steppenwolf.
I was looking at Steppenwolf. I was looking at him and I was going, is that a white Heimdall? Because, you know, Heimdall in Thor, in the Thor movies, when he's got his full armor on with his big helmet with the wings and stuff like that. I was looking at him in certain shots. He just looked like a white Heimdall.
Well, maybe that was the idea. Hold on. Those Marvel movies are doing well. If we make something that looks a bit like one of the characters in one of those.
Yeah, exactly. Also, Cyborg is basically like DC's version of Ben Grimm, because Ben Grimm forever just wants to become human again.
Yeah, true. But we'd need more character development on Cyborg to make that kind of valid.
Yeah. And also, I think Rob is kind of, in his way, accidentally stumbled across... I think might be one of the problems I had with the movie, in that kind of a lot of it just feels like we're going to try and copy what Avengers did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By which I mean, have it written by the same guy.
Yeah, that actually went as far as the post-credit scene as well, which, I mean, okay.
I mean, I feel like that's the kind of thing you probably shouldn't spoil on the show.
I wasn't going to spoil it. I'm just bringing it up and I'm just saying, okay. But, you know, one of those people in the post-credit scene, you know, again, it assumes that you've watched certain TV shows.
That being said, because there's two post-credit scenes.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved the one that was before that.
Yes. Because that one was a good one.
That's another thing.
Yeah.
apart from having a weird CGI upper lip, I thought Henry Cavill was actually really good as Superman.
Yes.
Because, like, this was the film where he actually got to be proper Superman.
What I thought about the whole film was that some of the humour was a bit clunky. For me, there were some very obvious sort of sparky one-liners between certain characters. And for me, the only ones that worked were the ones between Batman and Wonder Woman. See, all the rest felt a little bit awkward.
See, I was watching that and, you know, I just jumping onto that point, for me, that's kind of the difference between Joss Whedon and Zack Snyder.
I think actually the one-liners that didn't work, it was more just the actors didn't work it correctly.
Well, yeah, because I think it's where it's like, Joss Whedon's taken this very overly serious script and gone, okay, we'll just shove a joke into that bit.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean when I say I didn't explain it properly. Andrew explained it better than I did.
Yeah. But like, I think for me, one of the worst is like Batman and Superman are talking.
Yeah.
And Batman says, like, we need you to save the world. And Superman says, well, I know you didn't bring me back because you like me. And then Batman, like, just really awkwardly says, well, I don't. But, like, it just, that was one of the ones that seemed really out of place.
Yeah, that seemed clunky as hell, that one.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like because Batman was wearing his goggles, maybe he forgot that he's not actually Night Owl.
Oh.
Also, that being said, I think my favourite thing about Justice League was the fact that Batman wasn't the Bat God.
Yes.
Like, he was just a guy struggling quite a bit to keep up with these literal gods he's fighting with.
Yeah.
And I think that made him a much better character.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that we should...
He's like that great scene with Wonder Woman, where she's like... Because Batman's just basically covered in bruises, and she's like, you can't keep doing this forever. He just says, I can't really keep doing this now.
And that's what I mean. It's those... The bits between Batman and Wonder Woman, the humour works.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's... Because, you know, it's the Zack Snyder script will have had jokes put in by Joss Whedon all the way through. It's down to the actors how they make it work. See, and I think the Wonder Woman, Batman ones worked, and the rest, varying degrees of success, I would say. Some of the Jason Momoa stuff worked.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. Yeah. I think.
I feel like Jason Momoa, kind of Aquaman seemed like a very different character depending on the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like in some scenes, he's the moody guy who doesn't want to be here. But in other scenes, he's the party boy, this is Rebel the best Batman. Fun I've ever had.
Yeah.
It's just like a bat, I can dig it.
See, this is the thing. I mean, one of the things that I think, for me, the DC movies have done, have actually managed to get right, in my head anyway, is the relationship between Bruce and Diana. Because for me, I've always favoured Bruce and Diana as a couple, rather than Superman and rather than Clark and Diana.
Because that's what the Justice League cartoon did, and that's the best Justice League, and that's what every Justice League should be.
Well, it's not just the Justice League cartoon. If you think about it, Diana's going to be more interested in Bruce than Superman, because Superman's just basically Superman, you know? He just stands there when someone punches him, but Bruce actually has to fight, and she's raised in a warrior culture, so she's going to be more attracted to another warrior. Superman is not a warrior. He's a Boy Scout.
Do you know the other strength I think Justice League had?
What?
Was it actually feeling like it was the Justice League?
No, it was its running time.
Yes, that did help consider.
Yes.
Not being like 2.5 hours long.
Yeah. The fact that it was a nice I think it's pretty much dead on 2 hours, isn't it?
Yep.
I think it might even be just under.
It feels so much tighter than the 4.5 days of Batman versus Superman. Or is that just the director's cut?
No, I think that was just how it felt.
All right. But yeah, of course, we don't know now how Justice League will affect the development of the DCEU, seeing as they've now announced that there is no more DCEU.
Well, yeah, I mean, they basically said that, but they've also shelved Justice League 2 for the time being.
Which, you know what, I'm sad about. Because for all the flaws we pointed out, Justice League is a movie that made me like it enough that I want to see another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think the main problem with DC is that where Marvel kind of hit the ground running with Iron Man. And they had a plan of action. They knew how they wanted to progress after the first couple of movies. They planned it all out, you know, in their phases. DC haven't actually sat down and done that. And so it's taken them a bit more time to actually, you know, get up enough speed. And I think,
and it doesn't help that they've like had to take this very scattergun approach of, okay, this hasn't worked, so we're going to change it to this and this instead.
Yeah.
But like, I wouldn't mind if just if the DC movies from now on are just all the individual heroes off in their own corner doing their own thing, and then they just move up to the Justice League.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the other advantage Marvel had with the build up to like Avengers Assemble and stuff was, in the Avengers, you've got enough characters that are popular in their own right to carry off the standalone movies. Whereas I think when you look at Justice League, Wonder Woman, yeah. Superman, yeah. Batman, yeah. Cyborg, huh?
Yeah. But
I don't know, because I feel like
Aquaman's got a sketchy
history. Thor wasn't a very big character before that movie came out.
Yeah, this is true. Thor was big in Marvel circles, but not big. You know, it wasn't a well-known character for the average person on the street.
But when you're making films based on comic book properties, you can only base it on the popularity of the comic book.
Yeah, but
so, but I think, you know, I wasn't a huge Marvel reader when I was a kid, but I knew of Thor.
Yeah, but that's because
I knew of Iron Man. I knew of Hulk.
Yeah, but we were talking about people who don't read comics at all.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the people who got snared up in Marvel's net.
Yeah. They literally did. I mean, lots of my mates don't read comics. They don't know anything about comics, or didn't up until the Marvel movies. And, you know, if you ask them who Thor was, they'd say, oh, he's something to do with Vikings, isn't he? That's it. That was the limit of their knowledge, and that was based on what they learned in school. So, yeah, I mean, I think that DC could have done with having some of those standalone origin movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's been their problem, is Marvel did it first, so they've just been constantly trying to catch up ever since.
Maybe it would have made more sense to introduce Cyborg into Batman vs. Superman instead of have Wonder Woman come along during the fight.
Actually, that would have made a lot more sense. I actually agree with you on that.
Cyborg's dad appeared in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, so they could have just had... That's the film in which there's an explosion in Star Labs. Cyborg gets it. Victor Stone gets it injured. His dad's all, oh no, I've got to save him with my science.
Yeah.
And turns him into a robot man.
See, that would
not robot man, who is a different DC hero.
Yeah, that would have been much more sense.
So if you're a massive media empire that has a problematic cinematic universe and you'd like it fixed, send your problems to us on a postcard to the usual address.
Yeah, on that note, let's take a break.
There really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literally Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literally Loitering.
Hi, this is Private Dick Simmons from the popular web series Red vs. Blue, and you're listening to The Geek Show. Sarge approved.
The Geek Show is the largest independent podcast network out there, and to be independent, we need a little bit of help every now and again. So if you want something to show your love of The Geek Show, head over to thegeekshow.co.uk, click on the shop, and buy some of our lovely wares.
Welcome back, and now it's time for comics and manga, starting with Mick.
Hello! So, my first one this week is Frau Faust, Volume 2. Now, regular listeners will remember that I gave Frau Faust Volume 1 something of a cool review a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Mainly because it was slow. It was slow and there wasn't a great deal of explanation as to what was going on. And I said I'd reserve full judgment until Volume 2 came out.
Yeah.
And now I've read Volume 2. It's all right. It's worth the wait. We start getting pieces fall into place.
Ah, so the first volume was exposition then?
Yeah. Well, it's not really exposition because it isn't like long and wordy. And this is why this is happening. And this is why this is happening. There's a lot of elements of flashback.
Okay.
But you do start to get an explanation as to why Mephisto is split into different parts and why Faust is desperate to get all the parts collected, you also start to get an inclination as to something rotten at the heart of the church that have sent the Inquisitors after her.
What? Corruption in the church?
That's right.
But did I sound incredulous enough?
Yes.
You did. I mean, you have to remember that this is a fantasy universe and in no way reflects the real world.
Although they do say art imitates life.
Oh, so, I so tried desperately to artfully craft a disclaimer there and you just stomped all over it.
So that was contentious to leave an awkward silence after it.
So we get some idea of Joanna Faust's history and how she met Mephisto. We get some flashbacks to her friend Marion and why he decided to foolishly follow Faust in a quest for knowledge. And it's great. There's some real character development. There's also a hint that perhaps Faust's immortality isn't all it's cracked up to be, and also some hints that perhaps she may have once been he.
Oh.
Mmm.
Now that's unexpected.
It is. On the minor side, there's still that element, and I know we've covered it, we've mentioned it for other titles recently as well, that there's still that element of slightly confusing speech bubbles where there are two speech bubbles and three characters in the panel, and even when you figured it out, there's no sense to the alignment of the speech bubbles of the characters. So that can cause it to be a little bit heavy going, but I was a lot faster getting through volume two than I was volume one. And it wasn't just because I was unfamiliar with the characters, because you don't actually get that many characters introduced in volume one. But whereas, you know, after volume one, I was reserving judgment until I'd read volume two. Now that I've read volume two, I can't wait for volume three, which I believe comes out in January.
Fantastic.
Well, then, Faust, they're a pretty good turnaround then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on to me then.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, this is going to be a very quick one, because to be honest, I don't have much I can say about this. But I've read I Love This Part by Tilly Walden, and it's just it's a little graphic novel we got sent in. It's basically a series of sort of one-page scenes. So each page will just have a single big panel on it, and it's kind of these snapshots of the lives of two teenage girls. Basically, they start off best friends, spending a lot of time together, but kind of gradually realise maybe there's a bit more to it than that. But then kind of shows like the gradual sort of falling apart of their relationship, as they can't really cope with the social pressure of being part of the LGBT community.
Okay.
And it's an interesting story, and it's really well written. And the art does this pretty cool thing where sort of the characters are much larger than the backgrounds.
Alright.
So you'll get like the two characters, they'll be sort of lying down on the ground with one arm kind of resting their heads, but they'll be resting that arm against just like a mountain. But apart from that, it's fairly bare bones.
Okay.
Like, I feel like it would be quite easy to write a longer, more fleshed out story. And like, that's the problem. That's it.
That's it.
Wow. Okay, I thought there'd be more to it than that, but...
No, this is literally like a 1 minute... I mean, it took me like maybe 5 minutes to read it.
Wow.
Like, I think I might have spent more time on this review than I did reading the thing. Because like I said, each page is a single panel. There's not that much dialogue, and some of the pages there's like none at all. And one of the pages is just completely blank, which... It is just taking the mic all a bit in a book this short.
Sounds like what it needs is a post-credit sequence.
Yes, absolutely.
What, with a depiction of Wolverine somewhere?
Yes, just one of those big page-sized panels is just 70 different Wolverines, and you've got to find the right one. Like a little checklist on the bucket. Can you find the Wolverine in the cowboy hat? What about the Wolverine in the wife beater? Yes, they are the same Wolverine. Can you find the Wolverine with questionable fashion choices? Yep, that is all of them.
Oh, my turn, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, I forgot about Wolverine in an eye patch.
Okay, me now then. I got Helvetica Standard Bald, which is a collection of kind of 4 to 5 panel short comedy manga pages by Keiichi Arai, who is if you're an anime fan then you'll probably have heard of Nichijou, My Ordinary Life. It's a very popular comedy series, or surrealist comedy series, and Keiichi Arai is the brains behind the manga that gave birth to the anime series, but I think maybe brains is using, is kind of stretching the term. I'm not sure what goes on inside the author's head. And Mick had a go of this before I got my hands on it. And what were your thoughts on it, Mick?
I didn't understand it.
Yeah. And I'm much more au fait with this type of humor than you are. And I'll be honest, it was hard going for me as well, because the problem is a lot of these jokes are wordplay jokes, and they work in Japanese because the word for one thing will sound similar to the word for the other thing, which is kind of the punchline. But that then doesn't translate into English.
Yeah, and it's why I handed it over to you, because I didn't feel justified in reviewing it, because it may have been me that was finding it.
No, it wasn't you, Mick. You're fully justified. It is hard going, because it does rely on you having knowledge of certain key things, like maybe what the word for this particular thing is in Japanese, so that you understand the joke. And if on these pages it had some actual notes to explain, maybe. And I know
but then if you have to explain the joke, it's no longer funny.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I know it might not be funny in the normal sense, but at least you might understand it more, which might make you appreciate it a little bit more.
Just like this show.
Yeah. The other difficulty I had with it is that half of it is apparently observations on Japanese life, and the other half is jokes about the Ordinary Life manga.
Yeah. Keiichi Arai, he has several manga, City, Futari Soccer, Helvetica Standard, Nichijou, and Osaka Banpaku. And this kind of encapsulates aspects of City and Nichijou, maybe a little bit of Futari Soccer as well. This is the thing, it is a mishmash of things. The Nichijou stuff I kind of understood more than I understood the other stuff, but that's only because I've watched Nichijou, and so I'm familiar with the characters in these sketches, and because I've got that familiarity with them, it kind of makes the humour stand up a little bit more. But again, I've got that familiarity. That's not something that I could say for the average person who might want to read this. I mean, it does have some interesting bits that aren't the comics. It's got some sketches and some of Keiichi Arai's written thoughts at the back, and other pictures and stuff like that as well. The author's taken the characters of Nichijou and turned them into these kind of Hanafuda cards type things, and that's quite nice. Overall, I'd say this is definitely one for fans of Nichijou or fans of Keiichi Arai. I don't think if you're just an average manga reader, then you're not going to enjoy this.
Yeah, it sounds like very much what they've done is just said, hey, this manga's popular in Japan, let's just print it here.
Yeah.
Without any real thought about, like, is an international audience going to get this?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when there was talk of basically doing a dub of the anime series Nichijou, and the first question that was asked was, how the hell is that going to work? Because half these jokes are wordplays and they don't work in English.
Yeah, well, which, I mean, it isn't to say that this series is probably pretty good.
The series,
it's just that it's not something... I mean, I imagine a lot of English comedy doesn't make much sense in other languages.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know that there's probably some cultures out there where... the old Harold Lloyd and Charlie Chaplin, and even the Laurel and Hardy sketches, especially the stuff where he's turning around and hitting him with a plank. Maybe they might you know, view that as some kind of criminal behaviour.
I mean, I was thinking less racistly, more like the Four Candles sketch. That is going to confuse the hell out of, like...
Oh, that.
Some of the language.
Yeah, the Four Candles sketch. First time I saw that, I was confused.
I mean, that's basically what this manga is then, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of the Four Candles sketch of manga, that you say it. Unless you actually understand it, you're not going to get it. It's that simple. On to you, Mick.
It was at this point in the show that Mick sadly died.
Don't be killing him off.
I mean, I joke. God, he is pretty old. Mick, you're still alive.
Hello, Mick. Should we have Facebook
open? I'm not that old. I just forget where my mute button is now and then. I get confused. I think that's the one for the nurse.
But... Look, I'm just saying, I'm not discounting the possibility that you moved a bit too suddenly and just disintegrated into dust.
I've not said a word, Mick. All I did was say over to you.
I'm a man in the advanced stages of middle age. I am not Mum Ra. Oh, that was an 80s reference. Wasn't
it? Yes, it was. I am not going to be snarfing this one.
So I'm going to take you on the theme of archaic references. I'm going to take you back in time now to 2008 for the miniseries Serenity, Better Days. So Better Days is the second 3-issue miniseries published by Dark Horse Comics that is set in between Firefly the TV series and Serenity the movie. And it fills in a little bit of the history of Mal and the War of Independence that he fought in. And we get told about these renegade members of the Independence called Dust Devils, who were kind of the punishers of the post-war era. They didn't take defeat kindly, and captured and tortured and killed their former enemies. And basically, one of Inara, the companion's customers, lets it be known that he's hunting a dust devil. And Inara, naturally enough, is a bit upset because she thinks he's talking about Malcolm Reynolds. And she's a bit upset to find out that Malcolm Reynolds might be one of these dust devils. However, I'm not going to tell you how that pans out because that would be a huge, a massive spoiler. But needless to say, it's the crew of the Serenity doing
what they... Was it Sled all along?
Needless to say, it's because it's written by Joss Whedon, you instantly recognise all the characters that he created for the series. The art is gorgeous and all the characters are recognisable instantly. But it's the Firefly crew doing what they do best. They're going out on a heist. Things turn raw. Things go pear-shaped on the heist. They find a way to make the heist work. They go off hunting that down. They then find themselves on the receiving ends of some gunfire and have to plot a daring escape. In the meantime, their silver lining that they found disappears.
So it's basically the crew of the ship haphazardly making their way through the universe as usual.
Yeah. And this is why I like these Serenity comics, because they do just feel like comic book versions of episodes you'd expect in the main series. They don't feel like they're trying to expand the story any more than a normal episode would. And in the original run of Firefly, some of the episodes did flash back to earlier parts of the crew's lives.
Yeah.
But not so much that that became the main thread of that episode. It was just enough to explain why what was going wrong now was going wrong.
Yeah, and it's kind of like they were leaving some of their backstories deliberately ambiguous.
Yeah.
So that later seasons could go into them more. But then it got cancelled.
That's right. But what the comics are cleverly doing is not going too far into those backstories that everything is explained. They're going just far enough to open up another storyline, which will get resolved in your little mini-series.
I wonder, should a certain comic book company and their movie partners take note of this method?
It's a possibility. But I think a much better idea would be for a certain television and film company to just make more Firefly. I'm just putting that out there.
And also maybe do it in a way that undoes one of the plot twists of the movie.
Could do that. Could do that.
Yeah.
And also maybe another one of the... Well, not really plot twists, I guess. One of the tragic and unfair deaths, what happens.
That's the other thing about the comic books as well, or the ones I've read so far, is that that is undone.
Yeah, and I think you can say what it is. I don't think it's a spoiler these days.
I know it's not. It's not that I don't want to spoil it, Rob, it's that I don't want to say it, because then it will be true again.
We don't want it to have happened.
It was a leaf on the wind, Mick.
It wasn't a leaf on the wind.
We watched him saw.
It's too much, I can't carry on. Someone else take over.
Also, Buck died, and that made me sad, but less sad. Oh, that's right, I'm next.
Yes, yep. You are.
I was too busy mourning. So, I've been reading another one of Marvel's Star Wars-y books. This one is Star Wars The Screaming Citadel.
Okay.
And this is kind of a crossover between their main Star Wars book and a series they've got called Dr. Aphra. Who's that, you might ask? Shut up, Rob, I'll explain it in a second, is what I would say.
I didn't even say a thing.
So, this is it's set a bit after Star Wars A New Hope, which I think is where all of the Star Wars series is set so far. And basically, Luke Skywalker, he's just blown up the Death Star, but now he really wants to learn more about being a Jedi, which kind of sucks, because the one Jedi he knew is very dead. So he decides he wants to try and find another one, or at least the next best thing, which is a crystal containing the consciousness of a dead Jedi. Holocron is the word they used to use, but I don't know if that's the canon name anymore.
I think it still is Holocron.
Okay, yeah, one of those. So he goes to one of the new characters who's been created kind of in the course of this series, Dr. Aphra, who is possibly one of my new favourite characters, because she is, and I quote, a rogue archaeologist and sometimes scoundrel.
So she's intergalactic Indiana Jones, female version.
Basically.
I like her already.
And she's Indiana Jones / vaguely evil Han Solo. Like, she has a Wookiee partner who's like just this big psychopathic monster. And more importantly, she has two droids, 000 and BT. We're like the evil versions of C-3PO and R2-D2.
Oh, she sounds amazing.
She is amazing. She's like the best. And as are 000 and BT. Because 000, basically, he's C-3PO if C-3PO was also a master of torture.
You see, you've actually made it now so that for the first time since 1977, the Star Wars universe has started to interest me.
Wow.
And also BT is described as being a Death Star on wheels. Because he has just like a billion rocket launchers hidden inside him.
See, this is just sounding better and better, Mick, isn't it?
It is. I think they should reboot the whole franchise and start with this one.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely in favour of that.
Doesn't so, Dr. Aphra have...
She's got the holocron, but she's got no idea how to activate it. So she takes Luke to somewhere called the Screaming Citadel, which is gonna this planet run by a tyrannical queen who only allows visitors to see her once a year. And basically, if they can bring her like an intergalactic oddity which amuses her, she will grant them an audience. And obviously, one of the last remaining Jedi is something that interests her a great deal. Unfortunately, it's not because she's a keen museum goer. Spoiler alert, the woman in charge of somewhere called the Screaming Citadel isn't a good person.
Yeah. Kind of shows in the title.
And she wants to make Luke Skywalker one of her zombie slaves.
Okay.
But anyway, but don't worry, Rob. I know you're getting fretful. Because Princess Leia and Han Solo are on their way to save him. Along with a new character called Sana Solo. Who I think is supposed to be like Han Solo's ex-wife.
Okay.
And she seems pretty cool.
You know that thing we were saying on the Serenity section about those little backstories that don't need filling in?
Yeah.
This seems to be going down that route.
I'm just imagining the divorce. Maybe it was like the, maybe it was the Star Wars version of Kramer versus Kramer, Solo versus Solo.
No, it's going to have been who shot first, isn't it?
No, it would have been because they would have been getting custody of the Millennium Falcon, wouldn't they? and the Wookiee. In this case, the Wookiee is the dog.
But you know, Chewbacca isn't a child, Rob.
No, he was the pet. The child is the Millennium Falcon.
But no, actually, I think you'll find, Rob, in Star Wars canon, that Han Solo got the Millennium Falcon after he broke up with Sana Solo.
Yeah, he got it in the divorce. He won.
It's from Lando Calrissian, Rob. God.
All right.
You're not getting Star Wars canon right.
All right.
We're going to get letters, angry letters, Rob.
Yes, from people who care.
It was bad enough that I forgot the word holocron. Not this. We're going to have to go into hiding now.
Look, I'm sure I read one of the old Expanded Universe comics where the, you know, Solo had a relationship with the woman who actually built the Millennium Falcon, which is probably why I'm getting confused.
Well, just no, that didn't happen, Rob. They're not canon. Just forget it. They never existed.
Even I know the extended universe stuff isn't canon.
Yeah, I know it's not canon, but it's just difficult to forget it.
There was never any clones of the Emperor, Rob. Darth Vader and Boba Fett didn't fight each other that one time. It didn't happen. Unless maybe it did. Because I don't think many things have been, like, officially said to be non-canon.
Yeah.
So confusing.
I know it is.
But Star Wars The Screaming Citadel is also very, very good.
Fantastic.
It's like Star Wars, but also this weird horror film.
The way
Gillen and Jason Aaron, who are both very good writers.
The way you describe it makes it sound amazing.
Yeah, like, I'm definitely going to have to investigate more of these Star Wars comics.
Doesn't Dr. Aphra have her own comic?
Yes, she does, because this is tying off, and I am going to have to track that down.
I could have sworn I saw a Dr. Aphra comic.
Yeah, I think, like, she first appeared in the Darth Vader comic they did a while ago, and then, like, that spun off of that.
Yeah.
I've finished now, so if someone else wants to talk about comics, they can.
Okay, well, it's ending on me, and I have something that I've been looking forward to for a while. Yoshitaka Oima is the author of Asylum Voice, which is a phenomenal manga series which was adapted as an anime movie about the cause and effects of bullying. It's brilliant. It is one of the best kind of real life drama manga that I've read ever. It is that good. And so she's back, and she has a new manga series, which is kind of a fantasy manga series called To Your Eternity. And it starts off in a very kind of non-manga way. It just says, in the beginning, it was an orb, but it was more than an orb. It could replicate any form. I decided to cast the orb onto the earth and observe the results. And
right, so this is very different from A Silent Voice, then.
This is, as I said, it's a fantasy. It's very different from a Silent Voice. But
I didn't hear the bit where you said it was fantasy. And I got distracted by flicking back through Screaming Citadel.
Basically, this orb, it takes on the form of, you know, it lives for some time as a rock, sometime as moss, sometime as small creatures, and then it eventually takes on the form of a wolf. And it follows its own scent trail back to where it lives, and there it meets a boy. A thin boy who, and this is basically in a snow country. It's probably somewhere far north, and this boy is by himself, and everyone else has gone. He was told to stay behind by all of the adults and look after the elderly people, but it's been 5 years since everyone left, and the first story is actually kind of heartbreaking because it's just the tragedy of this one boy and his final days. And at the end of it, the orb, which is now a wolf, takes on the form of the boy and sets out to kind of achieve the boy's dreams of seeing what was out in the rest of the world, something that the boy couldn't do. And
you know, the orb could have just turned into a car and driven off. The orb's kind of a jerk.
Well, the orb hasn't met a car. It can only take on the form of things that it's actually met and understood. And in...
What about the spaceship?
Well, there are no alien spaceships in this. Not yet, anyway. But so basically, the orb only has, like, the forms that it's understood. Moss, rocks, lava, small animals, the wolf, and the boy. Those are the forms that it's met and it's understood. And as it's traveling along, as the boy now, as kind of an immortal boy now, It just the scene shifts to a tribe somewhere, and it doesn't say where they are; it just says somewhere. And this tribe still practice human sacrifice, or sacrificing a human to the gods, as they say. And a young girl called March has been chosen, but she doesn't. She's a little girl, and she is angry at the fact that she's never going to grow up now. And the god that they sacrifice things to is called Oniguma. It's basically a giant bear with spikes on its back. And I'm going to leave it there because I'm not going to tell you how this ends. But it does have kind of a brutality to it, which is which I really, really think is fitting, because this is a much more primal world that this story is set in. It is survival of the fittest. It is it is about what you can adapt to, what you can adjust to. People are hunter-gatherers in this world. People do live in tribes, and they do believe in odd superstitions and human sacrifice. That's just the way the world is at the time of this story. Yoshitoki Oima has really presented the story in a way that, you know, the pacing is really good. It doesn't hold up. It just keeps going and going and going. It doesn't get bogged down in sentiment or anything like that. And I think that is one of the really good things about it, is the fact that it doesn't get bogged down in sentiment, because A Silent Voice was all about sentiment, was all about feelings and emotions and thoughts, whereas this is more about seeing the world, seeing the brutality of it and the beauty of it, seeing the brutality and beauty of human relationships as well, but not bogged down in that kind of real-world sentiment. It's really well drawn, and I think it's amazing. I think it's an amazing start, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, so this is like just volume one, then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just volume one. It's not the complete thing, but I'm looking forward to continuing that.
But it is the complete volume one.
It is the complete volume one, not like your Flowers of Evil.
Flowers of Evil.
It may be good. I know to your I know to your eternity is definitely good. So yeah, that's us then, isn't it?
I think that is. My plan now is to go off and watch Marvel's The Runaways.
Yeah. All of our shows are available on Audioboom and Apple Podcasts. So if you're listening through any kind of podcast provider, then subscribe and it'll keep you up to date with all of the shows on the Geek Show Podcast Network, which we are part of. There are other shows like Cinema Eclectica, which is all about movies, because in the title has the word cinema. There are shows like Us, Four Panel, obviously. That's a bit dumb, isn't it, me saying that? Keyframe, that's the other one. Anime stuff, they do that, and animation. And yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. We have a Patreon. The links are on our website, so if you're a regular listener, then show your support. That's it from us. Until next week, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Nick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.